Verulam Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Verulam Sport Podcast. Every week, the team behind the award-winning Radio Verulam Sports Show will provide you with the most relevant news from the local and regional sporting scenes, whilst keeping you in the picture with national and international bulletins from the world of sport. There will be topical debates, regular interviews from local talent, and chats with those big-name guests that are a mainstay of Verulam Sport. As always, this is your show, every bit as much as it is ours. So, check out Verulam Sport across social media and get involved. For now, prepare yourself for this week's action-packed Verulam Sport Podcast.
Welcome to Radio Verulam Sport. I'm Graham Griffin, your Saints matchday reporter, and I have a special guest with us today, St Albans City FC manager Ian Allison. Ian, welcome and thank you for your time. How are you and your family keeping in these difficult circumstances?
Yeah, good, Graham, thank you. Thanks for asking. Yeah, we're all good at the moment. It's been a tough sort of 6, 7, 8 weeks, but thankfully family, you know, your loved ones, your mums, your dads and your aunties and uncles and are all fine. They're all keeping well and, you know, just keep our fingers crossed that we can all come out of this together.
Absolutely. And thanks for sharing, Ian. Yeah, we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of football and COVID-19 and talk a little bit further. So to give our listeners a bit of an understanding, today we're going to talk a little bit to Ian about non-league football and the impact COVID-19 is having on clubs in the sixth tier of English football, such as St Albans FC. But before we get into that, Ian, first and foremost, I think it'd be brilliant. There's a lot of fans out there in St Albans that know a lot about you and obviously the wider of the St Albans community and your background. But I think this is a real good opportunity for us to talk a little bit about you before we get into the nitty-gritty of the Saints and COVID-19. But a little bit about your background, really, from a footballing perspective. You've got a fantastic footballing playing career and also all the way through to you managing the Saints today. So share with us a little bit, if you don't mind, your playing career, how it all started and where you are.
Where do you want me to start, Graham? I mean, like everything, I was brought up in Stevenage in Hertfordshire. Peculiar that, you know, played for the county at sort of under 11 age group and then went to an all-boys school that only played rugby. And I thought that set me back a little bit in terms of my footballing career. Still managed to play on a Sunday. And at 16, my dad at the time wrote off to a couple of clubs, one of them being Colchester, and asked for a trial. I had two trials there. And on the second trial, managed to score 4 goals. And before we could leave the field, Jim Smith, who's no longer with us now, had me in his office signing forms. So that's where I started as an apprentice at 16 years of age at Colchester. 17, I won the Young Player of the Year award, made my debut against Preston North End, who was managed at the time by Bobby Charlton, and ended up playing nearly 300 games for them before I signed for Arsenal in 83. Long drawn out story in terms of some contractual disputes that went on with Colchester and myself that eventually got sorted out by the PFA and the Football Association, and I managed to get a free transfer from that and signed. Originally, I was going to sign for Fulham. Had the contract was dealed, and literally the last seconds, Arsenal came in and Terry Neill said, "Would I like to sign for Arsenal now?" Arsenal being my boyhood club and the club that I've always wanted to play for, there was no turning back. Eventually, went and met Arsenal, met Ken Fryer, Terry Neill, had the medical and signed from within 2 hours of having that. And then I had 4 years there, 4 fantastic years, obviously. In one way, it was sad the way it ended because I got left out for the cup final in 87. That was disappointment. But then signed for Stoke. Didn't quite work out at Stoke. Within 3 months, I was back playing for Luton. Had a couple of years at Luton and then I had another sort of 18 months back at Colchester. So that was in the January of 1990 I stopped playing. That was just over nearly 17 years of playing football at professional level. And then started in management in 1990. So that's where we are now. We spelled at Bulldogs, Stotfold, Barton Rovers, Stotfold, Barton Rovers, Boreham Wood, and Harlow Town in between that. And now I've had the last 4 years at St Albans, and that's what I've been doing in my life, 46 years, and still looking to try and obviously win things and be involved and trying to develop players, which is one of the most important things now, the enjoyment you get from some of the players that want to develop their skills and become professional footballers.
So we're very lucky in St Albans to have somebody who's played the game. I think you've had, 470 career appearances?
I think it's league appearances, yeah. I think in total it's just over 550 with the FA Cups and League Cups.
We won't dispute that other 80 then, but that's impressive, Ian. That's impressive. And also, obviously, I remember speaking to you a while ago and you mentioned, I think it was Boxing Day, wasn't it? You said you're 30 years in management. Is that right?
Yep. Boxing Day in 1990. Do you want to know the game? Bury St Edmunds against Bulldog Town. Alan Brazil was playing for Bury St Edmunds.
Wow, yes, because he's Ipswich based, isn't he?
Yeah.
Wow, fantastic. So for the young lads that you're developing, you've got a lot of experience to draw upon that. And in particular, with my Arsenal friends, they talk a lot about you because obviously being a Huddersfield fan, I didn't really know too much about Arsenal in the early days. But one of my Arsenal friends always say to me, that goal in the semi-final of the Cup in 1987, you've alluded to obviously the final, that goal against Spurs at White Hart Lane, wow. And I was reading on the Arsenal website as well, they've got a page up there, I don't know if you've seen that, talking a little bit about it. What was that like for you?
Well, it's strange because I probably haven't realised how important that goal was, and what brought it to my attention was when we had the Ray Parler sportsman's dinner a couple of weeks ago, where Ray stood up and spoke about obviously the 89 win at Liverpool and how the 89 win at Liverpool and the 87 victory at Tottenham were like the two big things to really stick in people's minds over the last 30 or 40 years at Arsenal. So that really brought it to my attention. And then you see every year there's lots of posts come out about it. People, whenever you speak to them, they always mention the goal in at Tottenham at White Hart Lane in 87. And it's like etched in everybody's brain. It probably hasn't had the same importance to me at the time. Yeah, it was very important. Since, I didn't realise how big that goal and how important that goal. And as I said there, it's been etched in people's brains for the years. And, you know, the same as in 89 when Arsenal went there and Mickey Thomas got the late goal. It's just strange how them things stick in people's minds, and it's played a big part obviously in me maintaining my relationship with Arsenal Football Club, but also in a lot of people's minds. It's made them very happy.
It has indeed, well said. And I think I had to YouTube it because I remember Arsenal from 89, exactly what you say, in that game at Anfield. Was incredible, wasn't it? And obviously they've just released a movie on it now, which is superb. But I had to, when I Googled your 1987, because I think you came on for Charlie Nicholas at the time, didn't you?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, how you took on that defender and scored. And as you say, in the folklore of Arsenal fans, they just love listening and talking about it, don't they?
So they do. I mean, if you look at the excitement behind the goal, I think there was 10,000 supporters in there. I mean, you can see really how, in terms of how dangerous that was, in terms of the supporters were penned in.
Yes.
But again, you know, the amount of rejoicement that was being shown, and there was just bodies going everywhere in terms of rejoicement. But again, it looked quite dangerous in terms of, you know, the fencing and everything that was there. And you see what happened with the Hillsborough tragedy in a few years after that, or a few months after that. So it goes back to show you that it was dangerous in them stages. But, you know, to get 10,000 people in at Tottenham was a massive achievement on their part. But you see how many people from Arsenal were there that celebrating the goal.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting now, isn't it, as you say, after Hillsborough, our football stadium has developed and become safer and the teams behind it now. I think I read the other day that there's a minimum of 300 people behind the operation to put on a Premier League game, for an example, 300 to 500 people. And that's obviously with all the legislation around it now, which is phenomenal. But Ian, I think we've potentially got another podcast on you and your playing career later on, but that's something for us to consider, right? Because I know many Arsenal fans would be really keen on that. But moving on to today, because obviously I think we're in such an interesting time, aren't we, from a societal point of view, but also from a football perspective. And I think what'll be really interesting is to get your insight for the benefit of Saints fans. And I guess the first of four questions I'd like to ask. The first one would be, first and foremost, your welfare and your team's welfare. So how have you and your team dealt with the COVID-19 pandemic from when it first launched to now?
Well, it's been very difficult because, you know, I was quite outspoken and I was put in a fortunate position that we managed to win at Braintree the last game that we were actually involved in. So that took us out of the relegation zone at that stage, and it allowed me to say that I wanted to say that we shouldn't have played that weekend, and I'm still adamant that we shouldn't have played that weekend. Did I know that this was going to grow to as bad as what it was? No, I didn't. But straight away, we'd lost another 10 people overnight, and I think that took it to 21 at that stage. That's how low the numbers was, and I think we're around about 32,000 people now. So I didn't have that whinge and that moan for no reason whatsoever. I just felt it was right. We shouldn't have played that, and we should have followed everybody's decision, Premier League's decision, and everybody's decision to cancel that weekend, which I might think it makes sense. We were lucky. We played well. We were fortunate. We won 1-0, and it took us out the bottom four. Since then, I gave the players the Tuesday night off because I wanted to try and see how it was going to untangle in terms of the government's decision, in terms of the National League's decision. On the Thursday night, we had the players in and spoke to them. We didn't train because we knew that the league was being closed down for a period of time. And that's the last time I've seen the players individually. I've spoke to them all on the phone. I've obviously seen how their welfare has been. One player only was Sam Merson, who felt he had very similar to what you said earlier, Graham. He felt very tired and lethargic and just felt really down. And he didn't feel as if he was quite right. And he thinks he might have had it. Didn't have the test, so we don't know whether he did have it. But he's the only one that's shown any sort of symptoms in terms of that. Everybody else has remained well. And that's where we are. We speak on a weekly basis or two weekly basis just to make sure everyone's all right. It's difficult to plan for the next season at the moment because we don't know when next season's gonna start. So in my diary, we start on the 30th of June. I think like everything, we'll start being pushed back as we get to nearer the time. We've had a couple of, and I've got one tonight, we have a couple of Zoom meetings with the coaches and just go through some stuff, some players we're looking to try and bring into the club to make us better than we was last season. But also discuss players in terms of next season and what we want to do, training facilities, training ideas, and do we look to bring some players in over the next 4 weeks, 6 weeks on one-to-one situations, because we might be able to do that now. We're just allowed to play golf with somebody else from a different household one-to-one. But I just don't want to put anybody at risk, Graham. It's just it's not one of those viruses or diseases we can take, you know, lightly, because you don't know what strain you're going to get. And you've seen from the 32,000 people that have sadly lost their lives, you know, some are young and some are old, and at the early stages I think a lot of people felt it was going to hit the elderly quite bad. And we've seen since that over the last 8 weeks it can take anybody in this world and in this environment. So we have to be very careful that we don't overplay what we're trying to do, but also try and stay on top of the training, in tops of their physical side of their game, but also knowing that some players do need a bit of a rest in the summer. So it's a difficult one to try and play where we're going to be, but again, we can only do it as the government and the rules and the laws tell us. At the moment, the National League hasn't finished the league, so you know we don't know where we are. I mean, I take it for granted we're not being relegated because we're not in the bottom two. Points per game would keep us out of it. Everything from that side of it, we're not being relegated. But is there going to be any relegations in our league? I shouldn't think so, because there's no promotions from the leagues below. So it's a lot of it. It's still in the air, and it's stuff that we're virtually doing it on a daily basis.
Right. Really, really interesting. And we'll explore a little bit further your point there about what's going on with the authorities and the league stature for this season and when a return might be likely. But just picking up on your point about the players and how you're in touch with them, And obviously we hear a lot about mental health now, and obviously it's huge. People are opening up about it. People are closing off about it. How do you think the players have coped from, obviously these are tuned athletes, aren't they, really, in some respects, as well as other things that they do outside of their football. But how do you think they've been coping with their mental health? Have you had any conversations about individuals struggling with the isolation, or do you think that the footballers are just really focused on being resilient and dealing with things?
I think most of the footballers are quite resilient in terms of the way they deal with things. I still think a lot of footballers keep a lot of things inside them in terms of we still have this macho image that you don't want other people to feel that you're a little bit weak. And I'm sure he won't mind me talking about it. It's Tom Bender, who, you know, I would put my heart and soul on Tom Bender to be the stalwart of any football club. You see how he tackles, how he heads and the way he plays the game. But, you know, he was quite open when he came to and spoke to me about that he was having some issues after Christmas. And he's been very open. I speak to him on a weekly basis. He's good at the moment. He's very good. He tries to occupy his mind. He said there's only so many times he can paint his house and his shed and his garage. So he's had his car smashed into twice. So he's keeping his mind occupied, and that's probably the most important thing. And anything like this is keeping your mind occupied, picking the phone up and speaking to somebody if you need to. And I've said to all the players that, you know, my phone's here. Anytime, listen, I put my phone by the side of my bed because, you know, my mum's 86 now, and if she needs us in the middle of the night, she can ring us. So if the players wanted to ring me, I wouldn't have a problem. As long as it's for the right reason, they can speak to us, they can talk to us. And if they felt they needed to go further, the club's been really good. And I know Lawrence speaks very highly on the mental health side of it, that, you know, if players need looking after, you know, we're happy and we're quite prepared to take people to speak to people if it's going to make them better and it's going to help them in their football careers.
Superb, well said, and delighted to hear that support is there, Ian. And no doubt, obviously, being in a sports profession background, there's that comradeship, isn't there, looking after one another. And that's great to see that's continued, in particular difficult times. And mental health, you know, it does affect all of us. We've all got it. But if there's an episode or an illness, that could be triggered at any point, and this could be a trigger. So great to hear. And yeah, if we talk about Tom just from an outsider looking in, I mean, 100% committed, isn't he? And it's, you can see why you've made him captain. And, you know, what a diligent, committed individual he must be. Great to have around the place.
He is, because he is a leader, as you say, and he's been with me for the whole time now, the 4 years. And as I say, you do lean on him. And I was pleased when he came out and spoke to me about his situation, because I didn't expect that. He's probably one of the last people I would have expected it. So it was good that he could build up the courage to talk to us. And it's important that we help the boy, because he's been great for us. He's got a young family. You know, his mum and dad come and support him. His wife's there. His little babies are there. And, you know, we've got to be there for him as well. So it's important that, you know, we look after him. But again, as I said, if there's anybody out there, you know, we had one or two supporters at the time that needed a little bit of support. And I know some of our volunteers worked extremely hard with one or two of our supporters. And I know Barry Skillett is working extremely hard now with a couple of the supporters to make sure they're okay. He makes sure he rings them, he talks to them to make sure that supporters are fine, because it's not just about the players and the playing staff. We've also got some really good supporters, some very loyal supporters. And some of them need some support and some advice, because their life's all about football. And when football's not there for a lot of people, there's a lot of soul searching. I think we've been very, very fortunate the weather's been so good, because certainly a couple of days when it's been quite cold and you can't get out to the level you want to get out, it does drag you down. And I felt it myself. Sunday, I felt really, you know, it was really cold, and you know, you just feel that you need your football. And it's nice sometimes just to get out, get some fresh air and try and get some positive thoughts in your head. But, you know, it's difficult because, you know, my time and a lot of people's time, you know, we've never experienced what we're going through at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such an unknown, isn't it? And it's, you know, we're only going to find out more how big this is later on down the line. And the key thing there from a mental health perspective is not to worry. It's just taking each day at a time, isn't it? And just really trying to keep yourself focused. And one of the things I've been doing, I'm quite busy with other things going on, but I've started watching, I don't know if you've watched it on ITV, but last night they started Euro 96 replay. They're showing a game every night. So yeah. I think that's I've been watching the analysis before and the games. And last night I watched England-Switzerland. Gazza, I thought, was fantastic. But in 96, I don't recall he was that good. When I watched him last night, he was excellent. I don't know if you had the chance to watch that to keep football, you know, with us who love the game.
We were just talking yesterday about some of the goal celebrations, because somebody said to me, did you have a goal celebration when you scored? And I said, I didn't know what I did when I scored, you know, what it was. But I said, they said, what was your favourite one? And I said, well, if you go back to 96, I think it was Gascoigne's celebration when he scored against Scotland, when he got the dentist chair.
Yes.
When they all got caught out in Hong Kong, didn't they? And, so, you know, there's little things like that, because I know he picked up at the time. I was working for Carlsberg, and he picked up the Carlsberg water bottles, and that was great publicity for us, because obviously it gave us great publicity and seeing that they're throwing water down his neck just after scoring against Scotland. So little things like that stick in your mind. It's an important thing.
Great goal, wasn't it? So let's move into a little bit to do. You talk there about the fans, you talk about the players, and obviously the St Albans to me is a community football club. Exactly what you said. You're not just thinking about your players. You're thinking about the fans, and obviously you'll know quite a lot of the fans in your four-year tenure at St Albans, which is brilliant. And I think they are driving hard to work with the community. But I think let's just pull back from St Albans for a minute and think about the impact of non-league football for the future. Obviously, you've mentioned there that you know you're still waiting for more information from the authorities on what's going to happen from last season and the next season. But you know, you've been in the game a long time. What's your thoughts now? What's the sort of mind maps you've been coming up with in your head of scenarios that could really happen, good or bad, for non-league football?
I think first and foremost, the good side of it is we get football back in non-league football. I think the bad side is that it's no good for non-league football for us to play behind closed doors, because all of the revenue that we require to run a football club comes from mainly from your gates. I think from the population side of it, they would want football back, especially the community side of it. But the biggest thing is, when can we start? That's going to be the big thing. Looking at now, they've just put the furlough back to the end of October. So that tells me football's not going to be starting much before October, November time. We've already just done 2 months very quickly in terms of where we are now. Another 2 months will be into July. We haven't arranged one pre-season friendly yet because we don't know when the season's going to end in terms of the Premier League and the EFL. National League's not finished yet. So you can't arrange pre-season friendlies. So I think it's going to be a really, really tough time, Graham. I think it's non-league football is going to be... it will survive. We know it will survive. To what level, to what extent, how many teams will have to go bust to come back again? I think there could be a number of teams that will struggle. I think there'll be money in the non-league game will be really low. I'm not saying it will dry up, because people always seem to find money. But it's going to be a tough spell, because there seems to be a hell of a lot of money going into the Premiership. My one question was, you know, can we get any support from the Premier League, the FA? I'm not saying that the EFL are in the same position, because you see from all them clubs that they're struggling as well. So I think there's going to be a lot of clubs in the same situation as Bury was last year. You know, who's to say that Bury was going to go bust and end up dropping down the leagues and leaving that Division One short? So I think a lot of clubs will survive, but it's going to be tight for the next sort of 24, 36 months in terms of the way they come back to the level they are now.